Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and this morning's conversation is with Beth Slavitt, a member of the Merit Systems Protection Board. Joining us in the conversation is Bob Reeve, another PwC partner. Well, Beth, at the end of the last segment, you said something interesting of how you're describing your career and your last job. You said, I was prepared for this. I knew the body of knowledge and I was ready. And I'm quite curious because you said as you introduced your career that you kind of moved around, and yet it seemed as though you built this body of knowledge on the way. Was that really your intention?
No, it wasn't really my intention. It's probably been my intention to, when I find out something about, is to learn it as well as I can and get very involved in it. But I think I started my career with wanting to be a private sector labor lawyer, and it just didn't necessarily develop exactly the way that I saw it. So I had gotten involved with an AFGE Local 1812 with my job there, and that opened up possibilities and learning and responsibilities and a familiarity with the knowledge of particular law that I wouldn't have obviously otherwise have had if I had gone straight into private sector employment law. I also want to just correct one thing because I missed a very important function of our board which is the clerk's office, which shouldn't be easy to miss because they actually sort of hold everything together, and they're the ones that have the most visible clerk. The board's name is the one that goes out on every decision that we decide, and they run the website, and they handle the paper, which is something people forget, but they really remember it if a piece of paper that is needed gets lost, and that doesn't happen with our clerk's office.
So it sounds like they're the ones who really touch the customer most directly. Who do you consider to be the customers of the Merit Systems Protection Board?
The primary customers are, of course, in terms of adjudication, are, of course, the appellants, both the employees and the agencies, all the federal agencies. One of our biggest customers within that regard is both the Postal Service and the Office of Personnel Management. The vast majority of our cases are adverse actions, with the second running up being retirement cases, because we adjudicate retirement cases. But in addition to that, human resources managers, the public, policymakers, both on the Hill and within the executive branch, are all our audience who we who we influence either through our decisions, which sometimes people will react strongly to, or through our policy studies, which have a broader influence, not necessarily as specific, obviously doesn't have the same kind of impact on an individual employee as a particular case does.
We know that the board recently released a video to inform employees about the appeals process. What tools or techniques do you use to educate the customers about the processes?
Use whatever techniques we can think of. And I think if you look, one of the techniques that's really been incredible through technology has been our website. If you look at our website, we really have become quite aggressive at making announcements and making ourselves accessible of what is going on at the board. I'll give you an example. We've had a very highly litigated case involving administrative law judge function, and the clerk's office was getting calls about it all the time. When is the decision coming out? Okay, will you send me a copy of the decision? To be able to just put that, just to announce and put that decision, which hadn't been done before, on the website so that it is accessible to everybody equally, is an incredibly important way to reach our audience. We've gotten excellent feedback on our website. Another thing our website does, and I can announce it first today, we have all our decisions on the website from 94 on. And we've been working for the last year on a project because people had asked, well, what about your earlier decisions, which are sometimes. And so we had to come over a number of obstacles dealing with contractor relationships and prior understandings and whatever. And as of today, all of our pre-94 significant decisions will also be on our website, and people can use them to research. In addition, we actively do outreach, speaking, and share that information amongst ourselves. We also try to do, we've been doing publishing our surveys on the website, which hadn't been done before. So not only do we put the studies that we do, the announcement on the website themselves, but we've been doing things, for example, you mentioned the, we've done a video to try to reach our audience. The result, the reaction, the response to that has been incredible. And we've already distributed over 1,500 tapes or cassettes to people to let people understand how a hearing is presented and what the concerns are, so they know what they're getting into. In addition, we actually asked for feedback from people on whether it's on our videos or whether it's on our use of video. We've also had video hearings where instead of having person-to-person hearings, particularly in an age where terrorism has become a real problem, for the ease of the parties, you may want to have a video hearing instead. We asked for feedback from our clients on how that was working. And one of the things that we have started using, the Office of Policy Evaluation, OPE, which generally does the studies, to help us internally so that we're not just doing broad-range studies for the entire federal government, but that we've been using the skills that they have to look at ourselves and make ourselves a better organization in terms of getting feedback and critiquing ourselves. Another thing besides the video we had was we instituted processes of what we call case suspensions, where people can actually, where the administrative judge, the parties can ask for a suspension of discovery, for example, because they need more time. We were having terrible complaints both within the organization and outside that sometimes cases, because we do such a good job and we move our cases so expeditiously that it gets cut off too quickly, that we should be sufficiently flexible to take that into account. And so we adopted a rule that allowed the parties and the AJ to work together to do that. And the feedback, the positive feedback has really been overwhelming and there hasn't been any negative feedback at all, both from our administrative judges, who didn't necessarily think all of them that it was a good idea, and from the public and from our constituents.
President Bush recently announced his reform package, the Freedom to Manage Initiative. How do you think the flexibilities in hiring and training, compensation of personnel will impact federal government agencies and from your perspective at the Merit System Protection Board?
I think it depends upon the leadership, the buy-in. I think the idea of some certain flexibility makes a lot of sense, but people with flexibility comes accountability. And the leadership of an organization and the middle managers who are carrying out that flexibility need to both understand it and have the resources to be able to do it. It has to be adapted to the culture of each agency. And some of those dear ideas and some of those flexibilities can and will be good, but again, it depends upon whether people are accountable for it and whether the leadership has the resources to really carry it out. Because if it's done only in terms of, well, this is our marching orders, but we're really not given the resources to, for example, hire the kinds of people we really want to hire, and we know there's a certain audience we want to get, but how do you get to that? People given the tools to understand how they need to do that. One of the things we've been doing with Office of Policy of OPE, we're doing a new study that comes out, for example, called the interview process. If you want to get the best people into government, one of the things you need to know how to do is to set up the interview process in a way that's a fair process and that everybody understands how the interview process works. So there's something called a structured interview. That's something that's not used widely in agencies, and it's because personnel managers and managers at the particular level don't necessarily understand and know about how to use that particular tool. So if you don't educate people on the use of those tools, you can have loads of legislation proposing certain things, but it's not going to work. There's another legislative proposal to deal with what's called the performance issue, and there's always a concern that the adjudicatory process takes too much time. It's too hard to get rid of a federal employee, a bad federal employee. Well, first of all, I don't think there are that many bad federal employees. I think most of our federal workforce is quite good. But to the extent that there is a proposal that says, okay, if you want to demote somebody or get rid of a performer, you only give them 15 days notice instead of 30 days notice, that's going to do nothing. That just has to do with the notice period. The question is whether the manager prior to that period worked with the employee, identified that the employee was a problem, clearly put the employee on notice and work with them. So there is that issue that's not going to solve the problem of the poor performer, and it's going to create real problems in terms of due process and spawn additional litigation over a 30-day versus a 15-day time period, and what should really apply, and did the person get real notice on that?
Well, that's it for this segment. So rejoin us in a few minutes as we continue our conversation with Beth Slavitt of the Merit Systems Protection Board. This is the Business of Government Hour.